This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Cambie podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Bartina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. An area teen facing manslaughter and other charges in connection with the November 19th fatal crash on Molino Road that killed 16-year-old Cambie resident Matthew Dewar will continue to be confined to house arrest after hearing in juvenile court this week. Ryan Anthony Keller, who turns 18 in July, was charged last month with second-degree manslaughter, criminally negligent homicide, two counts of fourth-degree assault, and reckless driving in connection with the case. Two of Dewar's younger brothers, aged 12 and 10 at the time, were also in the car Keller allegedly struck while attempting to pass another vehicle in a no-passing zone on South Molino Road, according to police and eyewitness accounts. The Dewars were on their way to Country Christian in Molalla, while Keller was headed in the opposite direction, bound for Cambie High. The younger boys, who were in the passenger and rear seats, were not seriously hurt in the crash. Keller was transported to an area hospital and treated for undisclosed injuries. The Monday afternoon hearing was held before Clackamas County Circuit Judge Colleen F. Gilmartin, who serves as lead judge for the county juvenile court, with Keller and all other parties appearing virtually. Keller has been confined to his Molino home on a strict form of monitoring known as sight and sound supervision, meaning those responsible for watching him, in this case, his parents, are required to keep him within sight and earshot at all times. Clackamas County Juvenile Counselor Amber Kersey told the judge he has been doing well and following all of the requirements of the court order. "No issues to report," she said. "He's been doing really well. He's been following all of his conditions of release. I've been able to take urine screenings from him, and they've been negative for all substances." His parents, Michael and Karen Keller, agreed. "Ryan has been following all the rules," Karen Keller said. "Somebody is home with him 24/7. He's doing school as he should and has straight A's, no driving. He has been following our household rules and abiding by his chores as tolerated with his injuries." Both Kersey and his parents asked the judge to consider removing the sight and sound portion of his supervision to make it easier on the Keller's work schedule, something Clackamas County Deputy District Attorney Eric Berzins, representing the state, opposed. "Things are working as they are," Berzins said. "We appreciate the hardship it may place on the parents, but at this point, we would ask that those conditions remain." The victim's father, David Dewar, also spoke at the hearing and asked that the current restrictions stay in place. A number of other family members and friends attended the virtual hearing in support of the Dewars. While not removing the sight and sound order outright, Gilmartin ultimately agreed to give Kersey and the juvenile department the authority to do so when and if they deem it appropriate. In that case, Keller's confinement would revert to traditional house arrest, with all other conditions remaining in place, including a prohibition against driving and any contact with the Dewar family. As expected, Berzins told the judge his office does not intend to request a hearing to remove the case from juvenile court and try Keller as an adult. The case was set for another review hearing on Monday, March 7th. Canby State Representative and former House Republican leader Christine Drazen has announced that her campaign has raised more than $1 million in the 2022 race for governor. While the newest candidate to dive into the crowded field and less than 1 month removed from her official campaign kickoff on January 4th, Drazen is the first Republican to eclipse that threshold. She also leads the GOP field in cash on hand by a wide margin. I'm so grateful to the many Oregonians that have helped us get off to a fast start in this race, she said in a press release from her campaign. Whether you have supported my candidacy with your time or money, please know that your contributions are helping turn our state around. As of Thursday, Drazen's campaign has raised more than $1,033,000 and was leading the field in cash on hand by a more than 2.1 margin with over $870,000 in the bank, according to the release. Campaign manager Trey Rosser said their support is a testament to the kind of leader she is and how well her message is resonating with Oregonians. Everywhere we go, folks are inspired by her vision for our state and her passion for putting the people back in charge of their state government, he said. Oregonians recognize that, with Christine as our governor, change is coming to Oregon on day one. In terms of fundraising, Drazen's closest Republican competition is Lake Oswego political consultant Bridget Barton, who had raised $540,000 and had $372,000 available as of last week. Sandy Mayor Stan Pulliam had raised $750,000 but had only $250,000 on hand, while Salem oncologist and 2016 GOP gubernatorial nominee Bud Pierce had hauled in $850,000, about one-third of which came from his personal coffers, and spent more than $700,000 of it. Drazen will have more time and energy to devote to her campaign next week after resigning her seat in the Oregon House of Representatives. Republican precinct committee members in Clackamas and Marion counties will nominate 3 to 5 candidates for Drazen's seat, and county commissioners will pick one to serve until the end of her term in January 2023. Because the process is expected to take a few weeks, Canby's House District 39 seat will be unrepresented for at least part of the 2022 short legislative, which kicks off Tuesday, February 1st. Drazen's resignation takes effect the day before due to House rules that bar lawmakers from fundraising during session. Despite losing a significant portion of federal funding, leaders of the Alsea School District are moving forward with their plan to allow students and staff to forgo masks when they return to school buildings on Monday, January 31st, making them one of the first public school districts in Oregon to openly defy the state's COVID mandates, which are among the strictest in the nation. Superintendent Mark Thielman, who oversees the 838 students enrolled in the district about 30 miles southwest of Corvallis, said he would accept losing the money, an estimated $325,000, from the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund. On Monday, masks will be optional, he said. They've been exhausting and harming the school climate. On Friday, January 21st, Thielman posted a letter to the district website saying that the Alsea School Board had voted to defy the state mask mandate and he would follow its guidance. Students and staff would no longer need to wear masks at the district's two school buildings, only on the bus due to overriding federal regulations. The Alsea Education Association, the local teachers union, has voiced its opposition to the school board's resolution, saying in a letter this week that the decision puts the health and safety of staff, students, and the entire community at risk. However, Thielman told KATU the move has also the support of most parents in the district. They want balance, he said. They want us to use good science, good data, to consider data from other agencies. And they want me, as the superintendent, balanced with negative aspects of efforts of those mitigations. The new policy was to go into effect Monday, January 24th, but Thielman posted another letter to the district site Sunday, saying he had decided to close schools Monday and Tuesday due to COVID-related staff shortages. He later extended the school closure through the end of the week and said that they would reopen on January 31st. Oregon has $1.7 billion available for schools from the Federal Relief Fund to help pay for building improvements, teachers, and programs to help students catch up on lost class time and learning opportunities. As of December 2021, Alsea had undertaken about $48,000 worth of projects that qualified for federal relief funds, and the state had reimbursed a little more than half of it. Alsea's budget as of the district's 2021-22 budget is about $15 million. The loss of federal funds is like losing a quarter for us, Thielman said. Enrollment for the two-building district, which reported only 158 students in the 2017-2018 school year, has surged over the past 2 years due to its aggressive focus on in-person instruction during the pandemic. More than half the students in the Alsea School District receive free and reduced lunch, often used as a proxy for the percentage of students from low-income households, and they reported a graduation rate of less than 50% for the class of 2021. In a note to Thielman, Oregon Department of Education Director Colt Gill wrote that the district's violation of executive mandates could result in fines of anywhere from $100 to more than $125,000 and daily fines of $250 to more than $12,500 per day for violations. The Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Division, OSHA, which is in charge of enforcing penalties related to defying statewide orders, said it was evaluating complaints connected to Alsea's actions this week, and it may take a few days to open an investigation. A motorcyclist was killed after hitting the back of a pickup truck on Highway 99E in Milwaukee just after midnight Friday, the Oregon State Police said. The crash happened around 12:29 a.m. near the corner of Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard and Boardman Avenue. According to OSP, 34-year-old Portland resident Norman Steech was driving a green and black Kawasaki motorcycle when he rear-ended a Ford F-150 driven by 44-year-old Benjamin Partain, also of Portland. Steech was fatally injured and pronounced dead at the scene. OSP said Steech's high speed is believed to have been a contributing factor to the crash. The roadway was closed for 3 hours while crash investigators examined the scene. Cougar Country hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. The West Lynn Lions and fans came to Canby for their first league showdown this week, but there was more than basketball on their minds. They also wanted to honor a friend and former competitor, 16-year-old Matthew Dewar, a student athlete for Canby and Country Christian who was killed in a fatal crash on South Molina Road in November. With Matthew's parents, David and Paige, and three brothers in attendance, the West Lynn boys and girls basketball teams arrived wearing t-shirts bearing the teen's name and four things he had written about in a school essay last fall titled, What Matters Most to Me? Faith, Family, Friends, and Basketball. West Lynn girls basketball coach Brooke Allen Cates is a teacher at Baker Prairie Middle School and one of Matthew's previous teachers. She's also a neighbor of the Dewar family. She stopped by their house on Saturday to drop off some extra shirts ahead of Tuesday's game. I was blessed to have Matthew in class, she told Now Hear This Canby. He had an incredible faith which led to many friends. He was a hard worker and took pride in always giving his best effort, and he loved sports. These are character traits that I loved sharing with my athletes. The family was also well known to many West Lynn athletes through David Dewar's work as a Canby chiropractor who specializes in sports chiropractic and care. A lot of our athletes have gone to Dr. Dewar over the years, so when tragedy hit the Dewar family, it was difficult for both communities, she said. I shared this pain with my team when it happened. I think everyone felt the loss of such an incredible young man. Cates brought up the idea of honoring Matthew at Tuesday's doubleheader, and boys' head basketball coach Eric Vukula was immediately on board. It was a great opportunity for two basketball communities to remember Matthew Dewar and the exceptional young man he was, Cates said. Dr. Dewar has helped a lot of our former players and athletes here at West Lynn High School, Vukula said. He has a legendary status of being kind of a miracle worker with different injuries. He has a great reputation with our players and our community. When we heard about Matthew's accident, we were all heartbroken. As a parent, that's your worst nightmare. I can't imagine the pain that they are still going through. The gesture was profoundly found by the Dewar family, who said it made them feel so loved. We felt so loved last night as we walked into the gym and saw all those t-shirts with Matthew's name on them, Paige Dewar said the next day. It's been so overwhelmingly beautiful how far Matthew's love has reached and touched so many people. It's awesome to see how people honor him. It really does help us walk through this devastating time.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Canby, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Canby. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's C-U-R-R-E-N-T, to 888-906-3432.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out which TV option I want to use when DirectLink turns off their video services in January of next year. It's so confusing. Do you know there's about 40 million streaming services to choose from? Which devices do they work on? What channels do they offer?
No, I did not know that. But you do realize that you're probably better off than you think. If you have DirectLink's Easy Video TV now, you're already using a streaming service. But listen, you don't have to go this alone. DirectLink is actually helping their members transition to their next video provider. The company has an extensive informational website where you can compare popular services, and they host live tutorials on streaming TV options to help you decide.
Well, hold the phone. Are you saying that they're actively trying to help their members switch to a competing service? Who does that?
Well, DirectLink does. I mean, I guess it's one more chapter in their long history of wanting the best for our community. They've actually offered free classes for the past 12 years that teach our neighbors about the latest technology and internet security practices. And don't forget, they also orchestrated that popular bingo game last year that helped keep everyone entertained and connected during the lockdowns. They've also launched special programs to help keep our students connected at home during the pandemic, and partnered with the city of Canby to give free Wi-Fi year-round at three local parks for locals and visitors alike.
Wait, DirectLink does all that?
They do indeed, and that's on top of providing the best and most reliable internet and voice services in town. So, to learn more about DirectLink services or how they can help you transition to the right video service for your home, visit directlink.coop today.
Joining us now, we're so delighted to welcome back Mike Schmader. He is a member of the Canby Knights of Columbus and the longtime chair of the Canby Crab Dinner and Auction, which is going to be presented as a drive-thru event again this year. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, Tyler. How are you today?
Hey, hi. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for asking. You were telling me you were out at the coast. I assume you were digging for crabs or looking for...
No, I was
getting
just...
ready. No, I'm kidding. Enjoying a little R&R.
But when I saw the weather down there, I kind of wish I was crabbing. It was beautiful out there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, tell us about this year's event. Like I mentioned, last year's obviously went drive-through format. We always love to do the crab dinner, and we're delighted to take part in that last year, and seemed to go pretty smooth, all things considered. Of course, we missed being able to come together, but you do the best you can, and you guys did an awesome job of completely reworking the dinner to make it something that could still go off.
Yes, it was unfortunate. It's kind of a bittersweet thing. It was unfortunate that we weren't able to hold it in the main pavilion as we have for so many years. But it was refreshing to know that a bunch of old guys can learn a new trick. And and with the drive-through success we had last year, it just kind of set us up for a little easier transition into this year. So we're really excited. The event's going to be on the 26th of February. We moved it back from the first Saturday in February simply because last year we had a hard time procuring crab due to the fact that a lot of state fish and wildlife studies showed that there was toxin levels out in the ocean due to a warming water currents that were causing the crabbers to stay in. They weren't allowing them to go out and do any commercial crabbing until those levels dropped.
It wasn't a COVID thing last year.
No. It was strictly because the ocean conditions weren't favorable to open the crabbing season at the time they normally do, which is right around the beginning to middle of December. So we decided let's move it back a few weeks and kind of assure ourselves of getting a good crab that, you know, will be accessible and the Fish and Wildlife departments of, you know, Oregon, Washington, California can make sure that everything's right where it needs to be. And that's what we did this year. We're moving it to the 26th and we've already secured our crab. We're getting it. It's fresh, local, down out of Garibaldi.
Nice.
In fact, that's one of the purposes for my trip over the weekend down to the coast was to talk with the supplier, and I've got everything lined up with him, and we're really looking forward to it.
That's awesome. Well, I've been hearing a lot about this year, and I believe it's, again, not necessarily COVID related, but, you know, the supply chain issues and inflation that are kind of hitting everybody. It's been right. A difficult year for the crab industry. Is that accurate from what you're hearing from folks?
That is accurate. This is a new supplier that we're going with this year. And the supplier that we usually went with out here in the Valley, they're finding all kinds of issues with trucking costs,
yeah,
fuel costs, and it just domino effect right down the supply chain. And so it's kind of tragic, but it's, you know, you have to just deal with it and do the best you can and try to keep the event, you know, not only viable, but just keep it alive in the community for everybody to enjoy.
Yeah. Did that force you to have to increase the prices this year? It seemed like they were maybe the same.
No, we did. We raised them $5 from last year. And we'd been talking about raising them probably 2 years ago, but we opted not to. But this year, the cost of crab was the most we'd ever paid. And so with those price increases and subsequent supplies being increased as well, we're forced to raise the price $5 per ticket. And yeah, we're hoping that not to have to raise it anymore for many years, but
for a while. Yeah.
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 Cause we try not to do that. I mean,
yeah. So up to $30 this year, which is still a really great price for a really great meal and the proceeds, 40. Obviously. Oh, 40, excuse me.
It's $40. Yes.
Okay. It's still a really good price. And it all goes to a really good cause. Tell us about some of the many charities and outreaches and nonprofit efforts that you guys contribute to and that this fundraiser supports.
Yes, all the proceeds from this crab dinner and the auction go strictly to our charitable organizations that we donate to. Some of the costs from the meal actually goes to start funding for next year's event.
Right.
But all the auction, and we'll talk about the online auction we're doing this year, which is something new. All those proceeds are going to the various charities that we donate to. And some of those charities are local here. We have the Canby Pregnancy Crisis Care Center here in town that we've donated to for many, many years. We also have the Oregon Food Bank, which provides meals for those folks that are, whether they're unemployed, underemployed, or just hard on the luck, they provide meals for many, many families in this community. And then we also have the Father Taft Home for Unwed Mothers. This is a home that provides care and services for young women that find themselves in the situation where they're with child and they might not have the best or stable home life to be able to depend on as a resource. So this home provides, you know, diapers, it provides, you know, babysitting support. It just supplies all the things that these young mothers will need to be successful in not only raising their child, but also going, carrying on with their own lives. And then we also donate to the Cambie Share the Warmth program put on here by the Cambie Utility Company. And then just small things like that. We also donate to scholarships for some of the parish kids that go through our REP program, and to help them, you know, further their education. Yeah, that's it's really fulfilling to be able to provide to these organizations that do so much. You know, you see what we can do in a small workforce, and then know that it just kind of exponentially grows when you give it to these other charities. They make so much more of what little we're able to provide to them. It's just great.
Yeah. Well, what I love about it is because there's so many needs in the greater community, and it's you know, and you only have so much to give, right? And it's hard to kind of pick and choose. Do I want to, you know, help folks that might be hungry, or folks that are, you know, like what groups? Right. And an effort like this really reaches across a lot of different safety nets, a lot of different potential minority groups, or just potential areas of need. And so your one small donation, however much you're able to give, can really make a huge impact, a big ripple effect across a lot of different needs.
That's true. And then this year also, you know, typically when we had our event indoors, we always had what we call the paddle raiser during the auction, or the live auction. We would have a cause or an organization or an individual that was in need in our community. And the community would come together, and we'd raise funds, you know, in the matter of minutes for this.
Right. It's always amazing to see. Yeah.
Yeah. And last year we had a family, a woman up in the Sanium Canyon fire that lost her home, and and she had five kids. And I mean, it's almost like a carbon copy. This year, a local family in Cambie here, Jose and Veronica Ortiz, their house burnt down 2 days before Thanksgiving. Yeah. And they lost everything. So we have pledged to do our special appeal, or what we used to call the paddle raiser. We're doing that for them this year to help them reestablish themselves, get them the resources they need to kind of get on with their lives and move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually covered this story. It was heartbreaking. As you said, it was right before the holidays.
The Ortiz family,
they didn't have renter's insurance. They lost everything they owned. Even their vehicles were destroyed in the fire.
Yeah,
they were parked outside the garage where it started. And I believe one of their vehicles was used for a landscaping business. So
exactly.
Yeah. Even lost some ability to provide income.
Yeah.
And the one thing that stood out to me, I remember from that story, was, you know, some friends that set up a GoFundMe. They asked for $5,000. Like,
they put a cap on it.
Yeah. Even a couple of people commented how small that seemed, you know, that they weren't asking for, you know,
right.
Just enough, you know, and that I think just shows some of that humility or whatnot. They recognize other people have needs and whatnot, but really cool that you guys are helping them out, because I'm sure their needs are continuing from that. That was in November, so.
Yeah, they're a very nice family. They're actually parishioners at St. Patrick Church, so there's a lot of support for them, not only spiritually, but, you know, everybody's trying to help out as best they can. And I did find that kind of interesting that the $5,000, you know, it just shows their humility.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just we hope we can really, really help them out this year with our special appeal.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about maybe what you learned from last year's drive through event. What tricks you old guys learned as the process and how it's going to work this year for picking up.
Okay. Well, for starters, I think what I learned the most from last year's drive through event was that old adage, you know, don't sweat the small stuff.
Mm. Yes.
And because I mean, the old dog new trick type of deal. is not really true. You can teach old dogs new tricks, because we are proof of that. Last year, going into the drive-through, we knew going in that it was going to be substantially easier than when we put on our main event inside the pavilion. I mean, just logistically, it was just, I mean, people don't even get out of their cars. It's quick. We didn't have the oral auction. We didn't have the silent auction. So, I mean, from a standpoint of preparation, it was, you know, 0.01% of what it would have been normally. But with that being said, we were kind of cutting a new path into something we'd never done before, and not knowing how the community would respond to a drive-through when everybody was so used to, and us included, we were so used to the kind of the, I don't like to use the word, but it's kind of true, the party that we had indoors. Because it was a party.
Yeah.
and I mean that in all the most respectful way.
Yeah,
in the sense that it was just like a giant community reunion. Now, you know, I was gonna say family reunion, but it's a community reunion. And it was fun, it was loud, and we had a great time. Transitioning to the drive-through format, it actually went a lot smoother than we possibly could have thought it could. And that's where this don't sweat the small stuff comes in, because there's little things in the main event, in the pavilion, that you'll have 100 of them. Well, in the drive-through, you might have 3 small events, things that you have to really be concerned about that could go wrong or might've gone wrong. But we didn't worry about that. We knew what we had to do. The fairground was fantastic to work with, and they made it really easy for us to facilitate that format. This year, we decided to save some even more money, because, you know, last year, when you don't have an auction, whether it's silent auction or oral auction, you're not generating as much money as you typically would. So this year, we decided, we talked to St. Patrick Parish, will let us have the event right there, since it's kind of an open door, out the door type of format. We didn't need to invest the money into having it at the fairgrounds, even though the kind of the geographical setup was really nice. We have the same type of facility at our church, in the back of the church, out the back of the gymnasium, that people can just drive up, get the crab, and then be on their way. So sure. We thought logistically we wouldn't have to be bringing a bunch of food and supplies from the church over to the fairgrounds and then back again. We could just have everything at the church and do it that way. And so that's the direction
that
we
sense.
Went. Yeah. It's the direction we went this year, and we're saving some money. We've already secured our days for next year at the fairgrounds, if we can have it indoors again.
Mm, great.
And so that's the way we're going. And so it'll be at St. Patrick Church, which is on 9th Street, Northwest 9th. But we're going to actually have people come in on the 10th Street entrance, which goes right around the back side of the church and then dumps right back onto 10th Street.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot easier. So that's the way we're going. We think it'll be a very smooth process, and we're ready for it.
That's nice. That sounds great. Yeah. You know, obviously miss the party, miss seeing everybody, the auction, and some of those elements are just really cool to see the generosity that comes forth from the community. It's just really heartwarming to just be an observer and a much smaller participant as much as we're able to be.
Right.
But, you know, I have to say, I didn't mind doing the crab at home. You know, it's kind of it's kind of nice to be able to do it, take the crab off, because you hand people a crab.
pretty much.
The folks have never done it before. You do it yourself. And when it was at the fairgrounds and an in-person event, you have to bring your own crackers and whatnot, because it's not something you can do with a plastic fork. So being able to take those home and kind of do it at your own pace and, you know, have something on Netflix or whatnot as well, is not a bad way to spend an evening.
That's true. And if any of your followers do know how to do it with a plastic fork. I want to know that trick.
Yes.
But just for my personal TikTok knowledge. Yes. But
this
anyway,
event...
no. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, as much as we loved having it in the main pavilion there at the fairgrounds, it's kind of sad. This is our 25th year of doing this event, and it'll be our second year of doing it as a drive-through. So we are more than excited to be able to keep this event alive, even though it's in a different format. And just one point of note, you know, last year we did the drive-through for the first time. We'd never really even had it on our radar of having ever needed to do that. But thanks to the pandemic, we were kind of forced to do it. But we sold as many dinner tickets in the drive-through as we do for the main pavilion event. So the community came out and just really kept us, our spirits were high. They were buying the tickets. They were wanting to keep this thing alive too. So it's just a testament to the community of Canby and how close knit they are to be able to support an organization such as us that are just trying to do so much good with, you know, during these tough times, and they really came through.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Thanks for all of your efforts to keep this event going and strong. Is there anything else that you want to share with folks? How can people get information? I know there's stuff online. And
yes. Yeah. We have two websites. One website's for the online auction that we're doing this year.
Awesome.
And that, for somebody to go online to see what auction items we have to bid on, you just go on to Bidding Owl.
Okay.
You type on Bidding Owl, and then you'll hit a link that says Featured Auctions on Bidding Owl. And then you scroll down, and Canby KC Charities, which stands for Canby Knights of Columbus Charities, is right there. And you can link onto it, see all the items we have, and bid on it. These items we're trying to do, we're trying not to do, you know, $20, $30, $40 items. We're trying to do $75 or more items so that we can maximize our charitable fundraising that way. So we've got some great items. We got a trip of a five-night stay down in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Oh, nice.
We got a cabin over in Joseph. We have my wife and I are sponsoring a dinner here by the Dahlias, a dinner for six. And so there's all kinds of great items that you can bid on there. But you can also buy dinner tickets if you type in if you just type in Canby Knights of Columbus, and then there's a link there that'll get you to the Canby Knights of Columbus website. And then that has a link on that page that it's very self-explanatory. It just says purchase tickets, and then you can click on there, and it'll guide you right through the process. If not, they can reach out to me personally, and I can hook them up with tickets as well.
Awesome. Are you sure that KC stands for Knights of Columbus? I heard it was Kansas City. Big Chiefs fans out there, you guys.
Well, no, that's a good one. I was pulling for the Bills myself, but I love the
All
Chiefs
right.
as well. So.
Well, they almost pulled it out, didn't they? That was quite the
that
game.
That was some of the greatest football and worst defense I've ever seen in my life.
Greatest offense and worst defense. Absolutely.
No kidding.
Well, thank you for being in such a good mood today, despite that disappointment. Again, really appreciate having you on, Mike, and we'll look forward to seeing you in February.
Tyler, we always appreciate your interest and your keeping the community abreast of what we're up to.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
And welcome back to the ad sponsor section where I get to talk to people about books because I always drag Megan Waterman in here to be with me. Hi, Megan.
Hi. That's not a bad thing. Talking about books is always the best time.
I think you know of all people that I can talk about books endlessly.
I do.
Yeah. So, Megan, do you want to tell our listeners about what's going on down at the Book Nook?
Oh, at the Book Nook, we are getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah.
I know.
There's only one I care about. And by the time this ad comes out, it's basically over.
Are you talking about Halloween?
Yeah, I like spooky, scary stories.
I know you do. We've got a lot of great spooky, scary stories in right now.
Yeah, yeah.
We do, but spooky, scary stories are also good for Christmas. Do you have a favorite author that writes spooky, scary stories that are appropriate for Christmas?
You go with your classic Charles Dickens, right?
Yep.
Some Christmas Carol stuff.
Absolutely, that's my favorite.
That's the best. There's M.R. James. I know about him. He did a whole series of short, scary stories for
Christmas.
Short,
scary stories? I don't know. Christmas in general is kind of scary. It depends on how many people you have to buy for.
How many people you have to cook dinner for.
Right.
Speaking of cooking dinner, Thanksgiving is coming up.
Thanksgiving is coming. We have got some beautiful cookbooks in recently and some really cute kids' cookbooks just came in if you want to start cooking with your grandkids or starting to train up your little ones to cook Thanksgiving dinner so you can just sit on the couch and watch football.
And right now is the time to go in, right?
Yes.
Because waiting till Christmas Eve for that one special book that someone wants isn't going to work.
It's not going to be there. This year, it's no secret, the last year and a half has been a little crazy for the whole world. And that is really going to affect Christmas this year. There are going to be serious stock issues this year. So get your Christmas shopping done early. We've been working really hard to get as much inventory on our shelves and in our overstock as possible so that we have what you want at Christmas time. But if you know now a title that you want to buy for somebody for Christmas, get it now.
All right.
I might not be able to get it later.
And what is all three of ours? Because we also have Amy in the studio with us. What's all three of ours this season's book recommendation?
Okay.
Amy, what's your book recommendation for this season?
The Night Before Christmas.
All right. Yeah, that's classic. Megan?
And for me, my favorite Christmas read? Oh, okay, my favorite book that's coming out it's no secret, I'm an Outlander fan. I love Diana Gabaldon. There may be a cardboard cutout of Jamie Fraser in our bookstore. Book boyfriends are a thing.
Yeah.
And finally, book 9 is coming out towards the end of November. So you will not see me until I finish reading that.
And mine is the Dungeons & Dragons Feast of Legends or whatever, the table. So make sure you guys come on down to Book Nook. Megan, where are you guys located?
We are on the corner of Grant and 2nd in downtown Canby.
All right.
And now, a message from Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take this moment to invite you personally to come and hang out with us for our end of season client event. It's a thank you to all the wonderful people we've done business with, as well as a welcome to a lot of our community. I'm doing this in partnership with Vanessa Zimmerman, Zimmerman team at Academy Mortgage. It's just kind of our way of saying thank you. We've really enjoyed getting to know you, doing business with you, etc. We'll be outside. We're sensitive to the fact that we're in COVID, still dealing with that. So it will be spread out. People will have room to breathe and sit and walk and talk. Reckless Company, if you've never heard them before, they're awesome. They're going to be playing. We'll have TMK here. I can't wait to try the corn dog. I've been waiting like 2 years to try this corn dog. So it looks amazing and I've heard it's amazing. And I think there's quite a following. Also, they have all kinds of other food. We'll have beer and cider. Everything's hosted, of course, as a thank you. Again, it's for our clients. It's for our community. We really, really want to come and celebrate. We'll have swag for you, all kinds of fun things for the kids. We hope to see you on 9/16 from 4 to 8 in the afternoon.
Oh,
All right, we draw this episode to a close with the return of Can Be Then, one of my favorite segments because I get to learn so much about the history of this beautiful little town of Canby. Can Be Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They're not your average antique shop, and they're open daily. You can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby. That's opposite Wake Park. Or connect with them through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. Well, as you know, things have been a little interesting around Clackamas County these days. So the crew here at Now Hear This Canby hasn't quite had the time to do our usual digging through the dusty tomes to discover the gems of local history that we love to share. But as it turns out, we've all just had the experience of living through history, and we wanted to share a few stories you probably hadn't heard. So our own Tyler Frankie, the man, the myth, the legend, took a recent trip to the Clackamas County Fairgrounds this week to hear from volunteers who have been caring for hundreds of people and thousands of animals evacuated from their homes due to the wildfires. And here's what we heard. They called it Noah's Ark, a small building on the Clackamas County Fairgrounds stuffed with dogs, cats, turtles, people, a rabbit, a dove, and a handicapped duck. Noah had it easier, though. He only had two of each. We had over 1,400 animals at one point, recalls Kurt Vandenbroek, a member of the all-volunteer Clackamas County Sheriff's Posse, a critical part of the annual county fair, as well as the impromptu one that was staged there as wildfires forced thousands to flee their homes with all manner of pets and livestock in tow. Goats, turkeys, there's pheasants in that barn over there, says Drew Cosland, standing behind the red gate at the fairgrounds on Saturday evening. We briefly step aside as a pickup truck carrying three people and 13 ducks, all bidding loud farewell, rolls by. Kausland, an iron worker and welder by trade, wears his trademark black cowboy hat with a large feather of some variety stuck in the band. As far as I know, it came from one of the ducks. More cattle and horses than anything, Kausland continues. It's been the most controlled chaos I've ever seen in my life. For Kausland, the crisis began early. The night the fires broke out in Clackamas County, September 8th, he and his girlfriend, Angie Zeiss, got a call. Hey, so do you have any trailers available? Zeiss recalled with a laugh. It was neighbors needing to move over a dozen horses as flames spread rapidly westward and northward toward Balala, Colton, Estacada, and the surrounding rural communities. Oh, we just scrambled, says Kausland. I called the fairgrounds. I think it was around 10. I said, hey, we're coming with horses. I've got 14 coming right now, and there's probably going to be a lot more. And we've been basically going since then. For Kausland, for Zeiss, who is the 4-H pygmy goat superintendent, like her mother was before her, and for Vandenbroek and so many of the other volunteers, the fairgrounds feels almost as familiar as their own homes and stables. We spent a lot of years down here, she says. When all this happened, you know, this was home. We just pulled together. I don't know day from night at this point, but we'll be here till it's all over. I ask what the motivation that has been to keep them all going, and Kausland is almost as confused by the question. Well, people needed help, he said. I mean, we've all said it multiple times, but this is what we do. 4-H, rodeo, it's all a big family. And it doesn't matter if you're blood or not, we'll do what we can to help you out. Considering that Noah's Ark was on the premises, perhaps the night crew should have not been surprised by the floods. It happened last Thursday as the much-anticipated rains finally brought some relief to weary crews battling wildfires aided by unbearably dry conditions. But the charred, bare earth wasn't ready to absorb the deluge, nor was the Clackamas County Fairgrounds stormwater system. I was up to my knees in water, says Cole Carroll, then reconsiders. Probably a couple inches below my knees. His boots are still drying, adds Cosland, who had been called to Montana for work at that time. The Rosebook Arena, which houses 20-some horses, flooded, and it fell to Carroll and a few other volunteers to get them out. Oh, no, they weren't having it, Carroll said to one of the horses. I got kicked. Whew! Still hurts. Horning Hall flooded, says Zeiss. It was nuts to see how much water was coming down. We thought we were at the tail end of it, but hey, you know what comes out of the tail end sometimes. And there have been moments of fun. One of Zeiss's first nights, an evacuee came up to her. I know this is going to sound crazy, but I swear I just saw a chicken over there, she recalls the woman saying. It was not really a crazy proposition for Noah's Ark and all, and sure enough, the two women soon found a bush that was shaking suspiciously. It squawks and takes off running, she says. It wasn't a chicken, though. It was just a pheasant. They managed to catch it in the morning. They might not have caught the piglets that escaped on the other day if it not for Zeiss's 10-year-old daughter, Addison Hettinger. She was the only one that could catch them, she says. If you ever need exercise, go chase piglets. That wasn't all Addison was up to either. She also cleaned bathrooms, shoveled stalls, took the garbage out. Oh, she's been busting her buns, says Zeiss. Hardest working 10-year-old I know, added Coslet. For more tales from the Clackamas County Fairgrounds, find the story on our website, canbefirst.com. And tune in next time for Can Be Then. As always, friends, thank you so much for listening. I'm James Walton. Have a great day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle.
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah, they also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.